Let's do it. Let's do it. Okay. So, Quinlan, you're inviting me to a party this weekend that we're making up right now? Because here's the thing. It's I think we should Lunar New Year. And
Lunar New Year.
You know me.
It's Year of the Dragon, which is really, that's why I want to do, I want to do a flaming cocktail. But I'm really scared of burning the house down.
Yeah, but if the more adults here, here's the thing. Before, it'd be like two adults, two kids. Now, three adults, two kids. You have one extra, so you can grab the kids and run, and I can smother.
Okay, okay.
Do you know what I mean? Not to smother the kids. So I want to be very clear. I'm not asking
they
to
run
smother
to you, and you'll smother them.
I'll throw them in the fire for kindling.
You'll smother the fire with the kids.
Well, yeah. Is that not clear? We should make, like, I just want to eat all of the dim sum.
Oh, I know.
So I think we should, I do too.
But I also.
Or we should order it.
Or we should order it is another idea about it.
Like, I love a soup dumpling. Like, maybe I should go to Trader Joe's. What I would love to do if I'm watching the kids on. This is an insane idea.
Take my kids to Trader Joe's. Is that something you're thinking of doing?
Is that the most, that's insane. That'd be bonkers, stupid bananas. But I like sort of like, is she crazy
enough? How about when I get home from the play, then you go to Trader Joe's alone?
That means I have to leave. I don't know. Let's play it by ear. Let's see. Leaving with a buddy. I don't know. Let's just see how we feel.
You could still take Koa. But then you don't have to take Griff.
Dude, I tried to take.
That'd be an angle.
I tried to take my nephews to Trader Joe's and my sister-in-law was like, to the grocery store? And I was like, yeah. Why wouldn't I go?
Yeah.
It's an amazing place. They have stuff for kids.
Yeah, yeah. My kids like going to the grocery store. I just don't like going with them.
Oh, maybe
I like going in a big grocery store where I can put them both in a really big cart.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, it's just easier to keep like the running.
You like suburban.
Koa likes to run up and down aisles. And even at our tiny grocery store, I feel a constant tug of anxiety. So it's not the right thing.
Well, I don't love tug and anxiety. We love a tug, but we don't.
We love a tug. Can I tell you?
Tug me.
Tug me. Tugboat, baby. I'm going to Aladdin tonight.
Okay, I knew this. I knew this, but tell the readers what happened because it's kind of a miracle.
So I'm sitting at my computer yesterday and Carrie walks by me and I'm going, why don't we try defying gravity?
And I couldn't help but pause. I'm sure there was someone, we just got a comment, by the way, that I saw that talked about how in a previous episode, I talk about auditioning for basketball. And someone wrote, Carrie, such a theater girl. So whoever wrote that will absolutely know that when someone sings Wicked, I go like record screech. What's happening? Why?
If it's me, especially.
Well, it's been a while.
It's not on brand for me to like sing Wicked show tunes in general.
That's true. That's true.
So Carrie was like, why are you singing that? And I was like, you know why I think I'm singing it is every day, almost every day, I enter the lottery to get cheap tickets to Wicked, Lion King, and Aladdin because my thought is Koa's never seen a Broadway show. Those are the three I could potentially like take him to. Mm-hmm. And we live in New York, so it's sort of like, why not? The tickets are like $35 if you win. So I was like,
free.
They're free. So I was like, you know, that could be fun. Anyway, Carrie was laughing at me and be like, that's so cool. That's so cool you did that. You know what's going to happen? Because you told me about it, today you'll actually win. And we were both like, meh. And then I did. And I won Aladdin tickets.
Which is the third one I'd want to see.
Me too. I it's so weird. I didn't want to say it as though Aladdin was listening.
I'm like, no, but I got to say, I'm an Aladdin originalist. And I was Jasmine when I was a little kid for Halloween. And there's a picture of me squeezing my fake boobs together with a turtleneck underneath it. It's very cute, very chic. But I loved Aladdin. I thought Jasmine was so sexy. And I think I wanted to be like a sexy Jasmine. That being said, when you told me you wanted to take Koa to a Broadway show, I brought my nephews to a play. And like it was Mary Poppins and they were too young. And like, I think we had to believe at intermission because they were like, this is too much.
I'm expecting to.
I think he's old enough. I think he will. I think he'll make it.
Yeah.
But and also the spectacle of it all, like, I think it's going to really wrap. But I'm like, If I were with him, I think I would cry. Do you think you'll cry when you watch? Like,
no, definitely not.
To me, it's like, ugh, theater. Like, yeah. It reminds me of when we first saw when Koa was in a camp and I went and saw it. And I, like, you and Matt were like, this is weird.
Cute.
And I'm crying. Because he was singing and I was so really proud of him. It was, well, I think you're just like.
You got a friend in me.
And he was like doing
dances.
And he was
like pointing to himself. And wearing that hat he had made or something.
It was so cute. Yeah. And I think it was like his face when he saw his mom and dad were there. Mm-hmm. Like all that stuff like tickles. I mean, I cry at everything. But, like, all that stuff just, like, it means so much to him. And it was just so cool to see. That's how I feel about that. So, thank God I'm not going because it'd be, like, the beginning of, you know, Aladdin and I'd be sobbing. Oh, just completely. Staring at Koa like a creep.
Well, here's what will prevent that. An example of, like, your idealist ideas about what this is going to be up against reality is that when I told him we were going, the first thing that happened was he threw a tantrum.
You know what? And that's good that I didn't see that. That preserves the magic for me, which is a Disney phrase.
It was
preserving
like,
the magic.
I was like, Koa, oh my God. And then we were like, we think you should watch the movie tonight so that you understand what's going on in the show tomorrow. And he started crying about that and was like, I want to pick my own movie tonight. And we were like, dude, this is like a really special treat. And the fact that you're crying that we're like, you can watch a movie on a school night and then you can go see a play the next night on a school night. It's just like not okay.
Well,
but then we gave him a bunch of food and then he calmed down and then he watched the movie. And then he told me when I got home, because I had to go work the fish share. And then I got home and he was like, Mom, I want to go to Aladdin. And I was like, great.
The thing is I think when a kid freaks out like that, and I think it's so hard. Because you're like, this isn't like, you know, the context of The Incredible Gift, but like, this is all new. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And like, it's scary and foreign. And also, it sounds like his body was just fucking hungry. Like, it sounds like he just was like, need food.
I'm going to very generously chalk it up to hunger. And
yeah. But I understand.
Wish me luck tonight because I'm like, here we go. Like, but I am like, if he needs to leave an intermission, that's fine. It's a really good warm-up for like,
totally
good attempt. And I don't know what these seats are going to be is the other thing. And if they're crazy, crazy far away.
I bet they won't be.
They say when you're getting them that they could even be, what are they called?
Orchestra.
No.
Box seats.
Opposite. They're like, double, by the way, these could be mezzanine. The ones that you can't see. What are
partial
they?
View.
Partial view seats.
Partial view is still great. I want to be very clear. Partial view, they still consider it like you might see some people in the wings, but like you might not see all. Partial view is totally fine. You're going to get the show and the spectacle, the costumes, like everything, like the music is so catchy. I think the perk of going to like a Disney Broadway show is it's a Disney Broadway show. Like it's Disney-fied. They're doing it for kids that age. You know what I mean? Like Wicked, I think he'd really enjoy just because it's like a very interesting story of like good
versus
evil.
You know what
he'd
fucking love is Harry Potter. But
yeah, that is a hot ticket item.
It's
but that's
too
also
hot ticket
and also
item.
It's very long
and very scary. I heard Will saw it and said it was super scary.
Too scared. For
too
Will.
Scary for Will.
Happy birthday, Will! It is his birthday when we're
it
recording
is. Oh
this.
Oh my God! Happy birthday, Will!
Oh, that's really fun. Well, either way, like it's a really thoughtful thing, and I think every parent listening to this will totally identify with the being like, I'm going to do something so exciting for my kid. And then like they freak out, they throw a tantrum, they don't, and they're going to yell at you or they're not going to show their appreciation or in some way that you expected them and let it be a lesson. And this goes for people without kids too. You can't bank on other people's reactions. Least of all a child. Do you know what I mean?
So? But I think it's just so funny because when you are a parent, your whole life gets rearranged around people's reactions because the biggest joy you can get from this very hard job is having your kids like light up or feel really happy with something you brought to them. And it's like so magical that you're just like hunting that feeling.
Yeah, you're chasing that high.
You're just jumping on the Broadway ticket lottery every day.
Well, it's because you're – I think and correct me if I'm wrong, it feels like in – theater, when I work in theater, it's like you need to experience some lows to experience some highs. You know, like you, like life is made up of highs and lows. Mm-hmm. And I think as a parent, you see such profound lows in your kids because they're experiencing sadness and like you're there for all of it. They're experiencing pain. They're here for all of it. So anytime you get this moment of joy, it's like, oh my God, Like, thank fucking God they're happy for a minute. And
oh my God,
what a relief that is.
Completely. I had a really good moment like that with Griff today because he didn't want to go to school. And I found like the weirdest hack where I would, you know, nothing works. And then I just said to him while we were walking out the door, I was like, listen, there's four people in this family. Mama, Papa, Koa, Griffin. And I counted on my fingers, which he's really into counting on his fingers. And he was like, yeah. There is four people, and he like repeated me like a mantra. And then I said, Mama and Papa need to work. Koa and Griffin need to go to school. And he kept doing it on his fingers the whole way to school, counting out the four of us and then going, Mama and Papa go to work. Koa and Griffin go to school. And by the time we got to the school, I was like, so where am I going? He goes, home. I go, sort of like I am, but I was like, but what am I going to go do? And he's like, work. And then I said, what are you going to go do? And he goes, thought about it. Because, you know.
He's trying to find another answer.
Go to school. And I was like, yes. And then he walked in super confident. Because sometimes he has like a really hard drop off. And I was like, whoa, that was weird. Like,
it worked.
It makes me think I overcomplicate everything.
This worked. And then you're going to try it tomorrow and guess what's going to happen.
Punch me in the face.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? By the way, you're listening to Truly.
I was drinking tea.
Darkly. You're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Creepy. Do we have Patreons?
We have one single person
one
to thank.
Single but that's, person.
That's more than none. Just do the math.
Do the math today. Oh, I was going to say, we covered, it was a while ago, but in one of the Patreons, I covered the beginning of the electric chair, and there was an update. There was and when I covered the first person scheduled to be killed by nitrogen asphyxia, was that it, or nitrogen epoxy?
I don't remember the name.
It was death by nitrogen.
Yeah.
And we recorded it, and then January 25th,
they killed the guy.
And maybe I'll give the update on the Patreon, but I just want to say, if you're interested in that story and learning more about that, you should join Patreon because there's some fun episodes. Well, fun. I don't know if I want to say fun, but.
Well, there's also there's a story I want to tell you that I'm not telling you right now on the main feed, but I am going to tell you when we record the Patreon because.
I'm excited.
It's a little too sensitive to put out there in the main world.
Yeah, we got it. Listen, some of this stuff we got to keep a little secret. Some of this stuff because.
When I tell stories about like certain people in my life, I'm like, well,
not main feed. It's not main feed.
Don't put that on the main feed.
No, it's not main feed material.
What I do want to say though on the main feed is thank you to Julie W.
Julie W.
Julie. Even are Julie.
You are a double U. You're not a single U, you are a double U. We found the lick to your song because it's two of you.
You are you a Gemini, Julie double U?
Hoo hoo hoo.
Why don't we try to find...
Stop. We're not... Okay. We can't license it.
I just finished today a podcast that I was listening to. I think it's like 7 episodes. It's so great. I want to recommend it to the dear readers. It's called Ghost Story. And if you like ghosts and you like murder...
It seems like they do.
Murder mystery and Hugh Dancy. I mean, it's all those things one podcast. Do it.
Are you going to share any of the stories?
On it?
Yeah.
It was a single story. It was like a serialized. It was like a 7-episode single story, and it was so great.
Wait, true?
Yes.
Oh, I have to listen.
Oh my God, it was fabulous.
Do you want to give us like a little, blurb?
It's the guy that married into Hugh Dancy's family is the guy that produced it. And it's not very important that Hugh Dancy's part of the family, but it's like interesting. So it's this British family that lived in a house that was haunted, and for the first part is like establishing some of the interesting stuff about the haunting, but then basically they look into the family's history, and they have a grandpa or a great grandpa that his wife died by getting shot, and I don't want to tell you much more than that. And her brother also died. And it's a little bit of a question of who killed whom and what the family lore is. Could be true looking back at history and like with it. And the family gets kind of riled up about it. And it's
That's very fun. Interesting.
Definitely recommend Ghost Story. Am I first?
I'm first. Okay, so I decided to do this case. It's in the news, but it's a very interesting case. A verdict just came down. Let's get into it. I got this information from ABC News, NBC, CNN, The Detroit News, New York Times, Wikipedia. We're going to go back in time to November 30th, 2021. Jennifer and James Crumbly, they are the parents of Ethan, and they get a call from his school. Ethan is 15 years old, and he's a student at Oxford High School in Michigan. They get a call. They're like, we're really worried about your son. They get a call. They go into the office and they meet with the dean and the guidance counselor. And they get called in because teachers have noticed that Ethan is not doing well emotionally. And he's acting out in a way that's causing some alarm, raising some flags. They notice that he's turned in schoolwork and his assignments have violent drawings on it. It also says phrases like blood everywhere and the thoughts won't stop. Help me. On it, it says,
very scary.
Life, my life is useless. And so obviously this teacher who gets it sends it on to, you know, the administration. They bring his parents in. They also notice at school that he's searching online for bullets and he's watching videos of shooting while he's in class. They also find violent drawings written on other students' papers. So the school brings the parents in and they tell their parents, they tell Ethan's parents, they're like, listen, we think your son needs some help. We think he needs immediate help. And they say they even present the parents with a mental health facility that offers like same day. They even offer the parents options of mental health facilities that have same day care. Mm-hmm. So they're like, you can leave, take him to one of these facilities. They're worried that he is going to hurt himself. Yeah. The parents who both work full time, they decide we can't take him home, that if they take him home, they're going to be going to work. So he'll be home alone. It feels like the safer thing to do is to leave him at school in the care of adults. And then they can figure out what they're going to do with him after that day. The school agrees that being alone is not a good solution. So they're like, okay, great. So he'll stay at school. Now, there are rumors earlier that day that there was going to be a mass shooting at school. And so some kids say that they stayed home because of this rumor. That's just a rumor. What we do know is that a couple of hours after the meeting, Ethan goes to the bathroom and from his backpack, he pulls out a gun. And he walks back into the hallway and he starts shooting. He's approaching students and shooting them from close range. This school is trained in like a specific, I think it's called ALICE or something, but it's a measure that students or that teachers are trained in when shootings like this happen.
What year is this again?
2021.
Oh, wow.
So they immediately barricade doors. Students, like, they cover up the windows. They hide. So he can't. The teachers have trained for this in that they are able to shut him off from classrooms as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. But he went on the attack when they were doing a changeover of classes. So there were students in the hallway.
Who also can't go into a classroom and hide, I would imagine.
Yes. But it happened so fast. By 12:51, hundreds of 911 calls come in. And within 2 or 3 minutes, there are first responders on the scene. And he is arrested. Ethan is arrested and he is unharmed. Sadly, 4 students were killed. And their names are Madison Baldwin, she was 17, Tate Meyer, 16. And apparently Tate tried to stop him and was shot. Justin Schilling, who was 17, and Hannah St. Juliana, who was 14. Among those who were killed, there were between 6 and 8 wounded students and teachers. So they take him in. What we know is that the shooting lasted 5 minutes, but the students were barricaded. And so when the police were coming and knocking on the door, people thought that it could have been the shooter. The amount of trauma that all of the students experienced, there's a child who talked about being in the bathroom and hearing the gun cock outside while he was hiding and leaving and seeing bodies. The sheer trauma that all of these students encountered is just like, it's really fucking scary. But he is taken in unharmed and he pleads guilty to all 24 charges, including first degree premeditated murder and terrorism causing death. But of course, after this happens, there's the investigation on how he got the gun, you know, as they usually are, as there usually is with a school shooting. And it doesn't take them long to figure out that the gun was purchased legally and the gun was purchased by his parents for him.
And he's 15?
He's 15.
Why did he need a gun?
In this area, apparently, guns are pretty common. People go hunting, and around hunting season, there's notices around the school that's like, hey, don't forget, leave your gun in the car. So it seems like guns are really prevalent in this area. However, what's really important to note is that, if you'll recall, his parents were called into the school and told that their son was acting out, displaying behavior of, you know, displaying violent behavior or violent ideations, searching for shooting, sort of an obsession with violence and blood. And the parents never disclosed that their son has access to a gun.
Yeah. And you would think that as far as like our history with school shootings and that kind of thing, that when kids are displaying behavior like that, while it's really great to bring in the parents and all this, what do we think about it being a thing where we're also like, this kid's bag and locker,
yeah,
are not private anymore.
Yeah.
Not in this building.
Yeah. And they didn't, they never checked his bag. They didn't.
I'm not blaming them. I'm just like, how can we like couple policy with that, where it's like, how do we?
There are so many. Well, and school is one of the few places, I think, where your rights are incredibly limited. You don't have free speech in schools. Like, there's a lot of things in schools for the safety of the students that like your human rights are very limited.
And all these parents needed to say was, well, he has a gun. Let's make sure it's not in the building right now.
I mean, and from their perspective is they're like, oh, the gun is maybe
at home.
Home? Yeah. The gun was purchased 3 days before the shooting. And that's, and again, like he's displaying these behaviors. He's expressing these behaviors.
Well, we don't
and we're going to find
what
out more.
Their family life is. I mean, you must. Well, but I'm saying from my perspective, I'm like, guess they were completely either in denial and had signs or totally tuned out and disconnected from their kid's life.
What's crazy is 3 days before the attack, they bought him the gun and his mom even posted online. She was like, mom and Sunday testing out his new Christmas present because she got it in a black, they got it in a Black Friday sale. What's also important to note is, again, when they're putting together the evidence of the shooting and what happened the day of and what happened before, is that prosecutors have alleged at this point that at 1:22, which is about 7 minutes after the news first breaks, so the 911 calls come in at 12:51 p.m., the news gets wind of it, and at 1:22, 7 minutes after the first news reports came in about the shooting, Jennifer, his mother, texts Ethan saying, Ethan, don't do it. And then 15 minutes later.
Wait. When does this text come through?
1:22.
And he starts shooting when?
12:51. So it's before. So what happened was, I'm sorry if that wasn't clear. The shooting starts at 12:51. When news gets out and reports start being disseminated that like there is a shooting, there's an active shooter at the school.
Mm-hmm.
His mother texts her son, Ethan, don't do it. We don't know who the shooter is at that point. We don't know any other information. Then 15 minutes later, his dad texts him, or his dad calls 911, and he reports that the gun that he thinks is at home is missing. And he also says that his son, Ethan, could be the gunman at Oxford High. Mm-hmm. So it's like they didn't explain that information, but right after the shooting, like, oh shit, that could be our son. Our gun is missing. I think that's him. So this becomes a landmark decision by the prosecutors in Michigan, where they decide that, and this has never been done before, but they decide that they're going to charge his parents, James and Jennifer Crumbly, with involuntary manslaughter against the four victims. And this is a really unique situation because we can't even, like, sue the gun manufacturers, right? Right. It's like, how far does the culpability reach? Exactly. So I'm going to go into this case, and the decision just came out a couple of days ago. So for Jennifer.
Okay.
James still has not been tried, but I think we have enough information, and I just was totally enraptured by this case, and I want to talk about it with you. So they are announced. So again, as soon as they start investigating, it becomes very common knowledge to the world. You know, I think, of course, when there's a school shooting, everybody wants to know, how did they get the gun? What happened? And it's very soon after that they realize that this gun was purchased by his parents and given to this child who showed signs. And also, of course, they had a meeting that morning. Like, all of this stuff is out into the public. And so on December 3rd, 4 days after the shooting, they announced that they are going to pursue charges against Jennifer and James. The two of them fail to turn themselves in. And it seems like on December 4th, they leave their house. They're not found. December 4th, they are arrested in Detroit. And Jennifer's trial is first. And so they decided to do a separate trial between her and James. So her trial for involuntary manslaughter happens late January to early February of 2023, just this year. And so the prosecutors have a huge amount of burden on them because they have to determine whether, A, it was negligence. So they have to prove either that she is grossly negligent, or they have to prove that she declined to fulfill the legal duty as a parent and exercised reasonable care protecting other people from being hurt by her kid.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to clear one or two of those barriers. So the prosecution begins their case, and they've built a case against her. This happened in 2021, so they've had 2 years of building this case. I'm sorry, a year. They've had like a year and some change of building this case. So they of course lay out all of the warning signs of his behavior, and they say how the big question is why would you buy this child a gun?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you
Are you seeing something totally different at home?
Like, are you like, what's going on? And also, why didn't you secure the gun? Why didn't you take steps to acknowledge, where was it? So in this discovery, in the evidence that they're able to present to court, they see text messages that her son has sent her over the years. And as early as spring of 2021, he would text her and he would say that he was hearing voices, that he was seeing demons, he was seeing ghosts in the house, and he was pleading for her to respond, but she did not. They also found text messages to a friend from Ethan's phone that says that he told his parents about his hallucinations and he asked for help and his mother laughed at him. They brought his journal to the trial and into evidence, and they found, oh, by the way, I don't think I clarified, when he pled guilty to 24 counts of premeditated murder and terrorism, he got life in prison without the possibility of parole. He was 15. He was tried as an adult. So that's where he is. But they brought his journal into the trial, and in it, it says, my parents won't listen to me about help or a therapist. So it's like, there's all these signs, and now
I need help. Here's a gun instead.
I need help. Now, there's no evidence to say that she read his journals. And so prosecution is bringing to light, here are all these warning signs. Here are all these ways you failed. Here are all these ways that you ignored them. And they are presenting this case that she was distracted and cared more about her own shit than others. For example, we find out that she is having an affair
mm-hmm.
during this time. Little piece of information about the affair that I think is worth noting is that apparently the two of them would meet in the Costco parking lot. And I just need to tell you that because...
To have sex in the parking
lot? I don't know, but I just wonder if they sell like a jumbo size of condoms. Like, I don't know if you like go into Costco and you like are like, I
the
need...
The
largest box.
KY jelly you've ever seen
in your fucking life. Costco parking lot. And she also is a horse girl. She has horses. And so the prosecution is painting this picture that she is obsessed with her horses. She's having an affair, even work, the day where she's like, I have to go back to work. I can't take him home. Even that day, the CEO of her company testifies and is like, she could have left if her son was having an issue.
If you ever call and are like, I have a family thing, there's not that many jobs you would have that would be like, we don't understand, you're fired.
So it's painting this picture of this woman who is just not – but also like she testifies too that this meeting that she had with the school – with the dean of students and also the counselor, she's like, they felt really nonchalant about Ethan that morning. When we were like, we can't take him home, they were like,
okay. What's your definition of nonchalance? They called both parents in from a work day to go to the school to talk about this.
Yes, but when they were like, we can't take him home, they were like, okay. So it's like, I think there was some miscommunication.
So they're saying you should have said we have to, like, I don't know.
This is just what the prosecution is presenting.
Okay, okay.
So the defense brings 20, 21 witnesses. I read both, so I'll tell both numbers. And then the defense brings one.
Hey, it's Carrie. I want to tell you about my upcoming UK tour. I'm bringing my show Six Chick Flicks, or A Legally Blonde, Pretty Woman, Dirty Danced on the Beaches while Writing a Notebook on the Titanic, to the UK. We're going to over 50 cities from April 6th until the end of June this year. So please tell your friends, if you don't live there, but you know someone who does, please share it. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Six Chick Flicks and visit sixchickflicks.com for more information and for all the tour dates. See you there.
Jennifer Crumbly. She testifies in her own defense.
That doesn't sound like a great idea, but...
But she's saying, like, here's my experience. She says, I thought we were pretty close. We would talk. We did a lot of things together. I trusted him. This is about her son. And I felt like I had an open door and he would come and talk to me about anything. I felt as a family, the three of us were very close. She says on it, she goes, I look back and I wouldn't do anything differently. She says that she knew he was having trouble, but she didn't think it was that bad. She didn't know to the extent that this was going to happen, obviously, or she wouldn't have given him the gun. She says that in those texts that he was talking about seeing demons, it was an ongoing joke in their family that the house was haunted, is what she's saying. She says that she
straight don't believe her about that, by the way. I just think that's like just a lie.
Yeah. Yeah. She says that it was her husband's responsibility to make sure the gun was stored and secured. She felt really uncomfortable around guns, or not uncomfortable. She didn't know guns very well. Yet here we have Here we have this post where she's like going to the shooting range with my son, and there's a video of the last time.
Super uncomfortable about it.
And like doesn't feel comfortable. So she says that she put the gun in the back of her car, and when her husband came home, he took it in and secured it, quote, secured it. What's, again, if she's not comfortable, why is she the one going to the shooting range with her son? In addition, in the video evidence, the last time we see the gun in public is in her possession. She's holding it. And then the next time we see the gun is at Oxford High School on November 30th, 2021. Like I mentioned, this affair that unfortunately Costco is dragged into, what we do know is that after the shooting, she texted the man she was having an affair with and she said that the shooting could have been prevented and said the school should not have allowed him to return to class. It's interesting because she's coming from a place very soon after that's like, oh, they shouldn't have let him return to class. She's fighting that line. And I think she's placing blame on a school when I think she had just as much, ownership of it because she never told them that he had access to a gun.
Yeah. Well, passing the buck is understandable. I just mean, like, that is the only defense is to say, if you'd have told me I had to take him, I would have. But you didn't.
On the stand, she says, I wish he would have killed us instead.
Oy. I believe her. I believe she feels
that. I do believe that. I do believe that as well.
This is, did you ever read that book or see the movie? I read the book for a book club. We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Oh, I never read it. I haven't seen the movie.
The author said she was so scared to have kids and she didn't know if she wanted to have them or not, so to like therapeutically make her own decision about whether to do it, she decided to write a book of what her worst case scenario was. And her worst case scenario was like raising this kid that turns out to be like gives her guff, her whole, turns her into a bad person, like does all this, then she has another kid who she connects with and like a little girl. And anyway, he becomes like a school shooter, but he also kills her husband, her daughter.
It's
very
just
dark.
Like a nightmare. It's a nightmare scenario.
It's just like that would be the worst if you had a kid that killed a bunch of people.
Yeah, but you look at this relationship. And I don't, you know, at the trial, they showed a lot of images of the home and, you know, they're painting around to me. And her defense is like, I'm a mother. I'm doing the best I can. Like
And do we do that? Do we put people on trial for being bad parents?
Right. I mean, so again, like this is like a wild. Very interesting case. In the closing statements, the judge, because they're showing images of the shooting. It's an incredibly emotionally filled trial. The parents of the children who are killed are sitting there the whole time. They hear her say that, like, I wish he killed us instead. I can only imagine it would make them feel absolutely irate to hear that. It's like, go fuck yourself. You gave the kid a gun. Again, just to reestablish, the prosecution has to prove that she has been grossly negligent or that she declined to fulfill the legal duty as a parent and exercise reasonable care protecting other people from being hurt by her kid. Involuntary manslaughter does not require intent, so they do not have to prove that she is intent.
Of course she didn't have intent.
And it has to be a unanimous decision. The jury deliberates for 11 hours. On February 6th, we're recording this February 8th, just 2 days ago, the decision comes in. She has been found guilty on all 4 counts of involuntary manslaughter. She is the first parent in the U.S. ever charged in connection to a school shooting carried out by her kid. The jury foreperson was leaving, and she says that her verdict came down to the fact that Jennifer was the last adult with the gun. James has not been tried. They opted for a separate trial. And they both hoped that Ethan, their son, would testify at their trial in their defense in a way to take
this
ownership.
My problem, not theirs kind of stuff.
But his lawyer, who's trying to find an appeal, did not allow him or strongly suggested he should not be testifying at that trial. There is a gag order that remains in place until James' separate trial. So I will give an update when that comes. But her sentencing is scheduled April 9th, and she faces up to 15 years in prison. The families of the victims are very pleased with this verdict. And I'll go through some of the victims' families, and it's just because I think it's important. Hannah's dad said that he was both shocked and relieved. This is a quote. The shock is, I guess, I didn't truly believe that they would come back with a guilty verdict, and then obviously just relief that they had. They just looked at the evidence and used common sense and came back with the right verdict. Justin's dad, he says, there's this type of culpability out there now that gross negligence is not acceptable in society. I hope it resonates in the minds of everyone for a long time. And I just hope that it creates some kind of a change as it pertains to school shootings, these mass shootings and shootings in general. Tate's dad says, it's easy to point the finger at the gun. That's the only thing that's being addressed. It's the gun side of things instead of the systemic side of things. It all needs to be addressed. Again, this is a groundbreaking case, and it could open up other parents to this kind of charge if their kids commit these crimes. Who knows how many states are going to adopt this? This just happened in Michigan. In the last few months, parents whose kids carried out gun violence in other states have pleaded guilty to charges of reckless conduct or neglect, which is part of a push by some prosecutors to hold parents accountable when they are or suspect of enabling this kind of violence by their kids. And I think a lot of parents are pleading out now because they see this case and they don't want the same outcome.
Mm-hmm.
What's also important, I think it is related to say that there is a federal gun industry immunity law that was adopted in 2005 that does not allow civil claims against the gun industry. But state laws can push back. But I do think it's important to note that, especially after Sandy Hook, there was a big push to sue these gun manufacturers for putting these guns out. We have a long way to go in this. And I think what makes this case so interesting to me is looking at the ripple effect of, obviously, I think mental health is a huge problem in our country. And of course, these school shootings are perpetrated by people who are in a distressed state. But I look at this case and it's like, they handed this kid a fucking gun. Mm-hmm. There were all these warning signs. It makes me so sad. And any behavior, any adjustment that day, whether they take him home, whether the school checked his backpack, those two things could have saved 4 lives. So that's the trial of Jennifer Crumbly, first in the U.S.
Wow. Wow, I'm speechless. I mean, what a case.
Yeah.
What a sad story.
It's really sad. It's really sad. And I think, unfortunately, in the U.S., these shootings happen so fucking frequently.
Oh, my God. You got to hear my six-year-old. You got to hear, like, Koa telling us about the drill.
It's just, like,
heartbreaking to have, like, his little tiny voice being, like, there's a bad guy drill and a fire drill. And for the bad guy drill, we close the door. And no matter what you hear, you keep your head on your desk. Even if you hear big banging, you just keep your head on your desk. And I was like, I hate this conversation.
It's so heartbreaking. Because those, Columbine happened in 98. When was Columbine?
It would have been 2000, I think. I graduated in 01.
Yeah.
And I was in school, in high school when it happened. And I was...
Because you were in Denver.
A sophomore or junior when it happened. I can't remember. But I was in Denver, yeah.
Yeah. Which I can imagine Colorado. I mean, like, even those moments...
But it was unprecedented.
Of course.
Everyone was like, what?
It didn't make sense. And I think so often with these cases, we hear about it happening. And I think we move on quickly, mm-hmm. unfortunately, because there's another mass shooting mm-hmm. right around the corner. Mm-hmm. And so I think with this case, this was like the biggest mass shooting, I think, since like 2018 when it happened in 2021. And of course, like, there have been more horrific ones. It's like I talk about one in last week's episode. I mean, I talk about Pulse nightclub shooting, right? Mm-hmm. And so these happen so frequently, and it's so rare to hear about it again and have it come back. Mm-hmm. Which I also found to be really interesting. Mm-hmm. Anyway, thank you for letting me share that. That's scary. I'm sorry I shared it, but I want to know what Larry thinks. Let's call him.
He does not want to talk about that. He does not do well talking about anything related to children.
Yeah.
I don't either. I get it.
Hello, dearest readers. It's Carrie and Quinn from the future.
Me.
We recorded this episode a couple weeks ago, so I did want to give a little update. James Crumbly was convicted on 4 counts of involuntary manslaughter for his role in his son's mass shooting at Oxford High School in Michigan. And I want to give a little anecdote, which is I was actually in Pontiac, Michigan the day after the verdict came out. And when we talked about it in our Q&A, the whole audience cheered because it's a landmark case that allows for parents to be held responsible for their children's actions. So anyway, just wanted to give you that little update, and I hope you're enjoying the episode. Do you have anything you want to say, Quinn?
No.
See ya.
This is the Black Flash, also known as the Devil of the Dunes.
Ooh.
And this I got from lorethrill.com, Gothic Horror Story.
Lore Thrill?
Lore Thrill. Isn't that a cool
name?
Love
that. That's a fun website. Well,
and then Truly Horror, which is a branch of Truly Adventurous, my favorite place to get stories, had a really great, incredible piece that was written by Travis Brown. And this story happens in P-Town.
Provincetown.
You heard?
Oh, what is it? You know what I've heard about Provincetown? I've heard it is an open and accepting vacation destination.
I told Carrie the other day, I was kind of laughing, and she said, what are you laughing at? I said, I'm reading about Provincetown, and it's being described as one of the most open travel destinations. And I said, open? What do they mean? And she's like, oh, just that, like, a lot of gay people go there. And I was like, well, what a weird way to say that. Just be like, it's a gay destination. It's very open. It's like they were winking at me. And I was like, relax.
We're just open.
Provincetown.
It's like if you meet a couple and you're like, oh, how long have you been together? And they're like, but we're open.
Wink, wink.
They do a little wink, wink.
Yeah, Provincetown, open for business.
Very open.
We are back in the fall of 1938.
Oh, my freaking God. We're on the cusp of what war, Quinn? We're on the cusp
Dose.
Of...
Dose.
Is it because it came up in this article?
Yuck.
Ay, ay, ay.
But let's talk about Black Flash. So I got to tell you. So this article.
You do have to tell me. Here we are. You have to tell me.
This article comes out a year after our story starts. It was published in some, I don't know, little paper in Provincetown. But I wanted to read this quote. It ain't usually until cabin fever time that the balmy stories start. After folks have been pent up here for too long a time and too little space with just the same faces to look at every morning, afternoon, and evening, then the crazy yarns begin circulating. But winter seems to be shutting in early this year. Here it is only October and the Black Flash has been prowling, scaring kids so that they won't go out nights and won't go to bed, grabbing women, jumping over 10-foot hedges with no trouble at all. Chair springs on his feet is the explanation. So that's the quote from the paper that
Holy
I wanted to give
shit.
You, which is a fun, wild quote.
A scary quote.
The way that they're
like jumping out at
me. Don't you like the way this writer I like? I just like that he's like, hey, cabin fever came a little early this year, folks.
See here.
Step on up. Like,
well, he's a newspaper guy.
Springs on his feet. So
they could be talking about, you know, what's interesting is they made a really strong editorial choice. They could be talking about the looming world war that's on our, you know, doorstep. But they said, you know what? Let's do something lighter.
Right. Well, yeah. I like to think this was in one of those like side boxes of the paper and not like mainstream. But knows? Because what's going on at the time is that for a year now, there's a lot of rumors floating around town. A lot of kids have been saying that they have been on their way home at night and come in contact with a monster. And it's tall and in all black, like Grim Reaper vibes, with pointed elven silvery ears and glowing eyes. The eyes sometimes change color based on who the storyteller is, but they're glowing like fire. And it laughs. It has like an evil, maniacal laugh. And it feels superhuman. But when these kids see it at night, and obviously they run right away. So lots of kids are then gossiping about this, but it's not just kids that see it. So that's important. Katie Dos Passos is someone that wrote a letter to a friend at the time and said that there's some mysterious stranger that's appearing at night in people's windows, and that it's wears all black and that it can leap over fences and hedges. And so we have that adult's account of it. And like you illustrated, it is important that there's a war going on because we want to talk about the mental unrest of the community that is a fact. We don't know how it weighed in or matched up or if it has anything at all to do with this, but it is a fact. And outside of there being a war going on, earlier in that same year that they start to see Devil of the Dunes, they had a wackadoo weather event. The Great New England Hurricane happened, because this is like the Cape, right?
Yeah.
And so a bunch of homes got all busted and a bunch of people died, like 700 people died in this.
Oh, my God.
So I think it's important that you think about it as there's a lot of unrest, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of high anxieties. The kids who have started spreading this story all over P-Town and saying this is the creature we've seen, so people come up with nicknames for it. I myself really like Devil of the Dunes. So yeah. Did Travis, the writer of the piece that I really liked. But I think Black Flash was really common, as is Phantom Flash. Very cool, like Marvel names. Yeah. So if you are alone at night, you got to be on the lookout, because that's where Black Flash is going to come find you.
Yeah.
And aside from being able to jump crazy heights, Black Flash could run at amazing speeds, just move at amazing speeds. So because there's so many rumors, as I said, it takes on almost a creepypasta vibe where it's like everyone knows this story, but is it a made-up story?
Right.
And is it all just fun to – like once we're all talking about it, is it just like fun to keep talking about it as a community?
Is it becoming
as
lore?
Kids, as adults, is it just fun? I mean, Koa has a monster club and – he told me like all the three other kids in his club have seen monsters at his school. And they're like loving it. And Ko is not there yet where he's willing to make up that he's seen a monster, but he's like, wow, this is very enticing. And I get that. There is a kid that takes center stage in this story who's 14 years old. His name is Joey Jannard. And he has three siblings. They all believe in it. And they start a group. And the group is basically a monster hunter group. And they're going to try to find the Black Flash. They're going to try to put a stop to this. It's a really good 80s TV show, right?
Yeah. Stand By Me, baby.
Yes. So they go out at night and they search for the devil. And they go to scary places to look. So it must already be like my heart, like, you know, starts to be like, I'm like, oh, this kid probably grabbed like a couple of friends and went down an alleyway to look behind a dumpster and just like how fucking high your blood pressure would be and how you'd be. I get why it's also fun to look for this monster. And Joey really likes looking at, on the playground at night.
Ooh.
Which is picturesque creepy. And fun.
And it follows. Just going to a swing set and doing some weird like
Looking down the tube slide and being like, oh, I don't really know
if
something's
in there. Did they have tube slides in 1938? That feels like they didn't. It was probably everything was made of wood and everybody got splinters and hurt themselves is my guarantee. No mulch.
And playgrounds were probably even
creepier. For sure. It was like a torture chamber.
But other than hearing more and more stories because people know he's a believer and a devil hunter, he doesn't come in contact with the devil. So now the story that I told you about comes out this year later after some of these things have happened in the Provincetown Advocate. And one of the headlines is, fall brings out the devil of the dunes, hard winter certain as cabin fever stories start. So that's the first time I know of that the press is getting involved in telling this story. And the police chief has to then respond, who maybe has not had to respond publicly before, the police chief, Anthony Tarvers, who, by the way, grew up in the Azores.
Oh, where you're going next week.
Yes. Anthony Tarvers is like, if there ever was such a thing as the devil of the dunes, it was nothing more than a prank. And it's not a thing, and the devil's dead, and it's not real. And he's like, no, putting it to bed. These are jokers. Like, this is some kids having some
fun. This is riffraff street rat. I don't want that. That's an Aladdin reference for you.
Right. So the devil hunters are going out at night. They're trying to find where they think the devil would be. The war is raging. Joey's dad is on the Coast Guard, so it's a feeling of, like, is he going to get called away, which he does. And it's this like feeling where all these families are getting ripped apart in reality, where their grownups or big brothers are leaving.
Yeah.
And they feel really vulnerable and there's a monster on the streets. And
that's so
they
scary.
Can't fight in the war, these kids like
they're
Joey.
Too young.
But they can fight the devil of the dunes. So it's like you do see.
Oh, wow.
Travis does a really good job outlining like the psychological draw towards wanting to have a war at home that you too can fight.
Yeah.
Because you must feel so fucking helpless and scared.
Yeah.
And you need to like channel all that into a thing, a being. That still doesn't change the fact that there's some really creepy stories out there. There's a guy named Charles Farley who wakes up one night and hears a scream, and he goes into the kitchen and his wife is there and she's just petrified. She's shaking. And she's like, I was just standing here and I saw a fucking face looking at me while I was doing the dishes. And the face was like Voldemort face. Like
no nose.
Pointy white, like dark, like crazy fire eyes. And just like,
I don't like it.
Villain face. And she was totally flipped out.
Group hallucination. What is it?
It's like a foie de, but it's like a foie bunch.
Well, it's like when I covered the tsunami in Japan. It's like all these people could see things.
Yes,
it's like
yes,
it's like
all the ghosts.
It's like the shared trauma of a new war,
of a
people
war.
Leaving. Like all of those things can be justified. But so
Charles
scary.
But Charles to his wife, like he doesn't believe her for sure. He's like, maybe he had too much wine. And she's like, that's rude. And she's like, do me a favor, go look around the house because I'm scared. And so he goes out to the yard. It's totally pitch black outside. There's no moon. and he has a flashlight and he's looking around the yard, and then suddenly his beam picks up something, and it is a freakishly tall figure in the corner of the yard, bent down. And he's like, hello? And he calls out to it, and it starts to come towards him.
Towards. No, thank you.
He has his gun. Thanks. And he fires off a warning shot to be like, anybody in their right mind, I'm firing a gun in the air. It is met with laughter.
Pass.
And whatever this thing is starts to come toward him, but faster.
Open and accepting my ass.
So he tries to shoot, and he shoots. He's like a guy with a gun that knows how to use it. He aims well, and he shoots right at the thing. It doesn't do anything. It just laughs when he shoots it. And then it jumps over his fence and is gone.
Jesus
Christ. It jumps over his fence and is gone. So he goes in, and his wife's like, did you see anything? I don't know what he says to her. I picture he's like, mm-mm.
Like, or it'd be like
nighty
a
night.
Yeah. Really nondescript.
I do know that what happens after that is they close all the curtains before they go to sleep, and that no matter what, they just did it every night since. They closed all the curtains in the house. Like, it's like grown-ups have that, like,
don't look under the bed,
tuck me in feeling, like, ghost. Yeah, there's a monster in my closet. They're closing the curtains, you know? But, you know, they did tell the police. They did tell the press. So that's why we know that story. Another big story that starts to circulate is the story of Maria Costa, who is walking home one night from her neighbor's house, and she hears a buzzing sound coming from some hedges that she's walking next to. And so she stops because it's like a very weird sound, and suddenly a really tall figure walks out from these hedges, and she's scared out of her damn wits. She says it's 8 feet tall. Like, not a human.
God. It's like Slender Man almost.
And everything she described it as is how I've described for you. The fire eyes, the black sort of shroudedness of the thing. So she just runs.
Yeah.
And then there's like a rumor about a kid that got chased by it and it was spitting out blue fire.
Don't want that.
At one point, the local school burns down and they think it's it. And a lot of people, and including Joey, say that they saw the figure by the school that night. And then the school, like, and people are like, oh, it's after our children. It just escalates. And the violence that it is reported to do escalates too, because to just chase someone and then suddenly you're lighting the kid's school on fire. The buzzing thing comes up a lot too. People hear a weird buzz and the maniacal laugh. Those are the only two. We don't ever hear of the creature saying anything, but Joey's keeping track of all these sightings in a journal, and he's reading it campfire style to his brothers and sister at night. Let's read it before we go to bed. And a lot of people are like, it could be a group of kids that are in a trench coat. That's not what they say, but
it could be a layered trench coat.
It's a layered trench coat. People are like, this has to be like somebody in a costume scaring people. It reminds me of like when the clown stuff happened. Everybody thought they were clowns.
You on stilts? By the way, news update, that was not a real gig and it was canceled, and Quinn is not walking on stilts.
Thank God. There's enough trouble in the world. Aren't you guys paying attention? There's a war. There's a Devil of the Dunes. I don't need to play Queen of Hearts on stilts.
Well, you'd be playing Devil of Dune on stilts. That's crazy. Rumors come around. I get it.
So I do want to tell you a couple interesting anecdotes about it. One is that there was this guy that didn't believe in it, and his name was like, they called him Eight Ball Eddie, and he was like a local pool shark that would be like, I don't believe in the guy. And he'd, you know, run his mouth, and it was like a classic horror movie trope where he'd be like, if I ever saw him, I'd give him a talking to. You know, he's just a teenager and I ain't scared. Like, it was like that kind of thing. And he just won't take it seriously. He keeps saying that he thinks it's a guy wearing a black dress, and you're like, doesn't really sound like that's what it is, Eddie, but okay. And one night, Eddie gets his wish. He leaves the bar. He's by himself at night, and he comes in contact with the devil himself. And it's tall as hell, and it slaps Eddie in the face. And then
calls him a little bitch and runs away.
It just laughs at him and just keeps fucking hitting him over and over, like beats the shit out of him. beats the shit out of him, and Eddie somehow gets away and runs home. But then the next day he sees people, he's like totally fucked up. His face is all fucked up. And he's like, I don't think that's funny anymore. Like, now I take it seriously.
Holy shit.
Uh-huh.
Which feels kind of like, I gotta tell you, I kind of like the Black Flash in this moment, the Devil of the Dune. Because he's like, don't believe that. I'm just going to slap you silly. It's such
a great power play.
It's such a weird thing. Or I kind of love the idea that, like, okay, here's my alternate reality, is that Eddie, like, got in a fight with a woman and, like, was, like, just, like, grabbed her ass. And this woman just, like, beat the shit out of his face. And he was like, I can't tell someone that a woman kicked my ass. And so he, like, blames it on the Devil of the Dune.
I thought that too, that he would be somebody that almost no matter who beat him up, he would like do that to be like, it is the scariest thing.
Yes.
Like,
yes, yes.
It isn't the story that I'm more embarrassed by. I totally buy that. Yeah. But here's the like, how do you explain it? So we've dealt with all these kids. We've dealt with all these adults that have been alone. But one night, 4 P-Town police officers get a call and they show up and they see some kind of figure around the school's playground.
Ugh.
And this, I believe, was before the fire. So they end up seeing this figure. And it's tall, like spidery, walking around. So scary. So slender, Manny. And one of the officers is like, you know, identify yourself or whatever. Freeze, whatever he says. And it just starts running toward them.
Ooh, no.
But they don't fire at it because to them, they're like, what if it is a group of kids? What if this is a prank and we shoot a kid? So they don't shoot it, but the figure just laughs at them and then runs back onto the playground. And then it goes over the playground's fence, like quickly, like inhuman.
Yeah.
That's it. They never see it. But these 4 police officers did see it. They all saw this. They all saw this happen. Like it's not just some – it's not 8-ball Eddie. It's 4 cops now.
It's divided by 2, 4 cops. You got 8-ball Eddie. Divided by 2, you get 4 cops.
When the war ends, it seems like this sort of tapers away and just vanishes.
But and when – what year does the war end, Gwen?
I don't want to tell you. It's not – important to memorize numbers like that, Carrie. What's important is this. Even though we think it's over, it's not, because one day during the daytime, Joey is in his yard playing with his 3 siblings. His mom is not there, his dad is not there, and he sees the devil in the corner of their yard. And he freaks out, and the devil starts moving toward the kids, like always. It's not scared. If you see it and it notices you staring at it, it comes toward you. Yeah. So it comes toward them. And Joey freaks out. He goes into protection mode. He gets all his sibs in the house. And it's so scary because what happens is it's fast and it's at the door, like while they're closing it. And they lock it and they feel it trying to open the door. And then they start to run around the house, closing any windows and doors, making sure the house is secure. And as they're doing it, all of the possible entrances to the house, it feels like the devil is pursuing at the same time.
Oh,
it's like the feeling of like it's trying to get in from everywhere. It's surrounded us. So like the littlest kids go hide under the bed. Joey goes to the kitchen and he boils water. It takes forever. It like feels like it takes a million years.
Yeah, because they didn't have electric kettles back then.
Yes, but he boils it and he goes up to the second story and he waits till he spots a shadow beneath him. He opens the window and pours boiling water on the devil. And it like howls and runs away, and that no one ever sees it after that. So Joey's the hero in the story, but also what's the story about and why did everyone also stop seeing the devil when the war ended, right?
Wait, he poured the boiling water out the window when he saw
the shadow beneath it of the devil, like onto the devil from the second
story. No, I knew it was onto the devil, but I'm like trying – so he like saw like the devil's shadow on the sidewalk and knew it was on – oh, wow. Shh.
So one of the things that Travis points out is that this same time frame, there was something called the Spring Man of Prague, which was from 1939 to 1945, seen around Prague. And that was the exact same time frame. And
That's 1939 to 1945 is actually the duration of World War II.
That's a coincidence. It is described as the same in Prague. Like
That's crazy.
Can leap high heights. But it was supposedly cutting people with razor blades. Ooh. But the physical description's the same.
I'd rather be slapped Illinois, than a cut with a razor blade, if I'm being honest.
In Illinois in the summer of 1944, there was the Mad Gasser of Mattoon, which was also described as like thin man and supposedly was doing chemical attacks against people in the town. In England, there was Spring Hill Jack.
Oh, my God.
And that's 1939. And it was and they had like a hard year because at first they were like, there's a 35-foot-long sea monster that was discovered on the shore. And then actually it was just a decomposing shark. But they were like, their minds first, we're just talking about like the psychological priming that's going on where it's totally. Like, there is a sea monster on our shore. And then that same year they were like, War of the Worlds, is this real or not?
Yeah.
Happened on the radio. So you know War of the Worlds, right? That story. Okay, remember when I told you the story about BBC doing that ghost thing? The first case of something wacky happening was like War that was War of the Worlds, where it was a fake radio broadcast to say like aliens had come. And it was fake, but people tuned in thinking too late. And then they heard these that things the that scared the shit out
but
of
But also
them.
Like, let's be honest too, like we're also on the verge of World War II and it's like the amount of like fear and everything.
Oh no, the
like,
World War II is the thing for everywhere. I'm just saying some towns are more primed based on a hurricane, based on a decomposing shark, based on any number of things that were affecting your their ability psyche. To open up your mind to like, there are real monsters in the world, but then there were also the real monsters in the world, the Nazis, that was real for everyone. But it's making everyone feel unstable. And but they're also not at war able to actually fight a thing. Oh, so Jesus. What if you made the real thing? What if you were able to put all your anxiety into a more immediate thing?
Right.
And then you could say to yourself, now I know why I'm scared. Now I know why it doesn't feel good to be alone at night. Now I know that there's a real monster outside my door, because there's no logic to being in Illinois and being like, I'm scared of a Nazi submarine. Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. It reminds me of like every month I start being more anxious and weird and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden I realize I'm about to get my period and I'm like, it makes sense. I think that's what this is. Do you understand the analogy?
Yes.
Like, you're kind of like, you have like free floating anxiety from the world. And when you find something that you can like hone it in on and you're like, there it is.
Exactly.
There it fucking is.
That's why I like true crime. That's why I like ghost stories, because I'm anxious all the time and I love having somewhere to channel.
Yes.
That's the story of the Devil of the Dunes. That's crazy. It is. Just to end on a happy note, though, I'd love to tell you that Rynkarska just reviewed us and it just came through 2 days ago, but it just showed up on Apple today and it says, I found my new best friends.
Oh my God, I don't know you, but let's hang.
And she said that when she listens to us with one earbud at work, she just laughs so loud and no one knows why she's laughing. And sometimes she said one time, you two and I, which I love. One time, you two and I laughed for a good minute, I believe. And I just love that it was like the three of us having a laugh, but she's the one at work where people are like, you're just alone.
Was it the toilet legs? Was it toilet legs? It has to be.
Rynkarska, tell us.
It's so good.
So leave us a review on Apple. We want to hear about, we want to hear about you laughing. Don't leave anything mean. I'm not interested. I've got to be
honest. I'm really not interested.
We're not even actually looking for constructive criticisms at this point.
At this point, it is what it is. Do tell us right in to trulydarklycreeply@gmail.com and let us know how you like this new recording setup. Does it sound different? Does it sound better? Does it sound worse? Because we're probably not going to change it from your feedback, but we'd love to just know. I'm just curious.
Carrie just wants you to tell her it sounds great, because then she doesn't have any extra anxiety.
Oh, that's not true. Anxiety is always going to be there, my friend. Are you kidding? By the way, my doctor or my therapist told me the other day, she was like, you've been having a little bit more anxiety lately. Like, maybe you should get a blood test done. And maybe it's like a B5 vitamin D deficient. So the thing is
maybe you have parvo.
I ain't been around no dogs. Just dog feces for days. Dearest readers, we adore you. Thank you for being here. We'll see you next week.
Shabbat.
Shalom.